TSIA published a paper titled The Emerging 20, which outlines 20 potential use cases for AI in improving workflows related to revenue generation. We are currently conducting a research journey on which use cases are proving to be the most impactful. And as part of that research journey, I am meeting executives from AI startups that have solutions related to revenue generation. Today, we will meet one of these executives to get their insights on where AI can be a game changer for reducing costs and accelerating growth. I am Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I will be talking with Kelly Jarrett, SVP of Revenue Strategy, Operations, and Enablement at ThoughtSpot, an AI-powered analytics platform. Let's get the insight engine humming here. Welcome, Kelly. It's been I know you from previous companies and previous roles. It's great to see you again. And
you
so
too.
Let's start out with, how long have you been at ThoughtSpot? How long has ThoughtSpot been around? And what was the catalyst for starting that company?
I've been at ThoughtSpot for just under a year. So I'll be coming up on my full year this fall. So not long enough, but also long enough to understand what all we do and all the great things that are happening in the AI industry. But ThoughtSpot was founded back in 2012. You know, we're not the newest startup, but I would say like with the rise of a lot of the cloud data warehouse shift to SaaS, ThoughtSpot kind of evolved and almost restructured, went to SaaS and changed our model. And that changed a lot about how we operate and serve the market. So I would say since that came, you know, around COVID time, we have seen a resurgence and almost like a restartup environment, both with the industry and with ThoughtSpot. So yeah.
So in 2012, did you have on-prem solutions that then went SaaS, or did you start?
You got it. Right,
you did. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So you guys are through.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So you're through sort of the on-prem to SaaS, and now SaaS leaning into AI in our solutions. Okay. Got it.
That's right. So when you asked kind of what the catalyst was, I mean, the catalyst was, as you know, individuals and business users, they started to get more comfortable with the internet and wanting to use just natural language search for how they would find out any information, right? Like gone were the days of going to your web browser and typing in the web address you wanted to go to. It was all about going to Google. That's what we still do. So kind of the catalyst was, how do we sort of architect that and orchestrate that experience for data analytics? And, you know, since then, the market's changed, it's evolved, AI is becoming a bigger part of that equation. But in the beginning, that was sort of the catalyst that made ThoughtSpot, you know, sort of come to life.
Perfect. And your responsibilities in this role as, you know, revenue strategy, operations, and enablement, describe what you're doing there.
It's a good question. I mean, we kind of call ourselves revenue excellence because we serve the functions of ThoughtSpot that drive revenue.
Okay.
So we are kind of the supporting functions, right? We've got operations, marketing, business development, and enablement. And our job is to make sure the revenue teams are set up for success. And we're doing that with operational rigor and really setting ourselves up for success to the market. That's the job of my team. And, you know, as we look to expand and reach outside of the current markets that we're in, my job and my team is also looking to drive the strategies on where we should operate, where we should grow, how we should grow, and what some of those internal and external factors will be.
When I hear that, it's like sales ops on steroids, because it includes marketing and also the responsibility for identifying revenue growth markets or opportunities. Is that exactly right?
That's exactly right. Yep, you got it.
Perfect. Okay, interesting. That is an interesting combination. So you don't usually see all of that rolled into one function. And I'm just curious, when you got there, was that function already in place, or was it created when you got there? I mean, how did you guys land on the square of that type of framing for those responsibilities? Again, including marketing, sales ops, you know, a couple different components.
Yeah, you know, I will say when I came to ThoughtSpot, that wasn't my original role. It wasn't the scope that was that large. But I think with the changing needs of the SaaS industry in general, our company kind of identified where are the key needs for the company to have focus operationally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since I was brought in to lead operations, we identified several areas where, okay, we could use some additional operational rigor here. Some experience, we identified some change. So will it be the long-term, you know, setup? Probably not. As we change stages and grow, I think that's where we operate you know, a little more like a SaaS startup where we're being nimble to address the needs of the company and the needs in the market. So yeah, it is a unique setup. And I, you know, it could evolve and change over time. I would imagine it will.
So I think what's interesting about that is in this journey that we have around how technology companies are leveraging AI, and then we apply that to specific areas, right? So how are they using it in support versus professional services versus revenue generating workflows? And that has been the laggard. And part of it is, I think a lot of companies don't have a strong operational muscle around rev gen workflows. They just don't. And so, as you know, I mean, like the service organizations typically have strong process, you know, strong operational capabilities. And so I think it's fascinating. I mean, what I heard you say there is like, hey, this is a focal point for us because it's super important to our growth and we want to strengthen those processes and those capabilities specific to RevGen, which is perfect for this conversation because, you know, what are people doing there and what are they using? So I stated at the opening, I mean, we're researching this, trying to figure out how companies are using AI in RevGen. And, you know, I know we know each other from the Blackbaud days. And when I, you know, saw you landed at ThoughtSpot, I reached out because, again, the way you guys are positioning yourself as is, you know, a data and AI engine for a lot of different workflows, including sales and marketing. So that's really what, you know, caught my eye. And so what are some of the most promising use cases you're seeing for AI as it relates to revenue generation? What do you guys see there as a, you know, solution provider?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll start with just ourselves, right? Because of course we internally drink our own champagne.
I always say eat our own dog food, but then people say, no, it's drink your own champagne. Okay.
Drink your own champagne. So much so that our internal instance, which is a production version of our product, is called Champagne. So we drink our own champagne. And yeah, so when I came into ThoughtSpot, you know, one of the initial use cases was as an operations leader, it's my job just to kind of get in and take a look at the data. I'm not an analyst. I was not an analyst by trade. So coming into operations later in my career after several different functional roles was a little unique because I am not the operations leader that's going to get in and write code and understand that part of the business. So I, just like every business leader that exists in any company, any type of company, we serve a lot of different industries, just really wanted quick access to what was going on in the business. So the use case for us in particular, and for me in particular, was to get a really quick read on what was happening in our marketing functions, like which channels were performing well, what was our pipeline coverage, what was our pipeline production, which segments were doing well, which segments were struggling. And I was able to do that after a very quick overview of the product myself. And so I think that's like the key difference. So I give a couple examples of use cases, but what's unique about the AI component, especially ThoughtSpot, and really, you know, how we should be leveraging AI in general, like you can use ChatGPT. I was just at a birthday event for a friend of mine, actually, another ex-Blackbaud woman, and she read a poem that she had written with ChatGPT for our, for the friend's birthday, right? So that's a super fun way to leverage AI just in your everyday life. But in business, AI should be leveraged to kind of point out or indicate things that might be happening in your business that either you don't know to search for, or that's based on you asking enough questions that it will start to teach the model what you need to know and serve that up to you proactively. So there's a ton of use cases for AI and business intelligence, but the use case for me was really as simple as that. I had very specific business questions that I needed to ask and wanted to ask and get to know fast. And I didn't have to wait for our data analysts to build dashboards. Then I would have one additional question from that that maybe wasn't built into the filters, and they would have to go back and fix that in the dashboards and then come back to me. And, you know, certainly that would have taken weeks and weeks to get up to speed. So I think it's the AI and just generally the use case for us here at ThoughtSpot is leveraging that AI to get quick answers for business leaders that don't need or want the technical expertise or don't have the technical expertise to go build those dashboards themselves. That's us. That's how we learned. And it was a really great onboarding experience for me as a business leader to be able to get that quick access to what was happening so I could make immediate impact at ThoughtSpot.
Yeah. I just want to click into that use case you and the chair you were sitting in. So one of the use cases we've talked about previously on this podcast with AI and RevGen as an example is around renewal forecasting mm-hmm. propensity, right? So yep. you get a bunch of data in, you model it, and it gives you better insights about either renewal risks or customers at risk or the overall renewal number. So we've talked about that, you know, exhaustively here. Tell me again, your chair, so you come in and you're like, okay, what I heard there was, I want to understand on the marketing side, for example, how different channels are performing. I want to get a sense, you know, whether it's social, paid, we're doing this, we've got whatever you got going on to get your message out. So just at a high level, so leveraging AI, because, you know, historically, if you want to do that, to your point, okay, I've got to go to my data team, I got to get them to stand up a dashboard, I've got to say, I want to know this, this, and this. I start to look at that. Oh, I've got three more questions. I got to go back to them, mm-hmm. ask them to add those parameters. So just explain to me from the chair you're sitting in as an executive, what was different about the experience? Because I assume you're taking data about those channels, you're putting it into an AI capability to interact with. So tell me what that was like.
It really comes down to time to impact. And like all you're trying to do as a business leader in any company is make the best decision to solve the biggest problems that you need to solve. And so time matters when you're faced with those problems. And I think for me, the difference was time. I didn't have to wait and think about how should I ask this? Who are the right people? What are our tools that we have access to? Is it accurate? That's what I didn't have to do. So there was a whole mm-hmm. lead up of time that I didn't mm-hmm. have to spend there. And so instead, for me, it was quick access to that data, natural language search, asked a question. I mean, certainly there's like an overview of the product I needed to do, but I was getting really quick answers. And if there was something that was odd, right, I would ask my sales ops team, like, tell me a little bit more mm-hmm. about this. And they were able to tell me where that data came from and why. Because, of course, the back end is a lot of different data sources. And
coming
that comes into
the
data warehouse.
The
and then you got it. So for me, I mean, I think the simplest way to answer that question is just, it's a time saver. It's time that leaders do not have today that they can't spend doing all of that manual work and back and forth work and just letting them get to what's important, which is like, let's go solve this problem.
So again, for the audience there who is not going to be standing in the position you were when you first came in the chair because of your company and what you do, right? You're a data analytics AI company.
Yes.
So what I'm hearing is sort of by default, a lot of your critical data stream are going into a platform that yep. then you as an executive can query and say, I need to know this, this, and this. And so that's your default posture, if you will. And
you
I think what's interesting about that for companies who are like, you know, well, that's not where we are right now. I would assert that what you are articulating is where every executive should want to sit, will be sitting in the future. That's going to be the default posture, right?
Yeah.
You basically say, look, our data streams, which right now we have interesting data locked up in our CRM system, in our marketing system, in our whatever system, and it's all in there. And we got to have, again, some data analysts try to pull this together. That has got to all feed into a common platform. We got to put models around it that we can then query in a very natural way. That is the game changer. So another use case, you know, for the audience is just, you know, how are my marketing channels doing? Do I have, you know, I'm, you know, leveraging that from an engine that can give me insights on that. That's a huge step forward. So let me ask the question, how do you help? Because again, you're in a privileged position coming in because mm-hmm. that infrastructure was there. How does ThoughtSpot help customers move forward and implement that type of capability? So, you know, you kind of go in, just kind of walk me through that experience.
First of all, it's education. Hear AI, and there's now every customer out there, every prospect out there is putting AI into their budget now. Go buy some AI, yeah. right? That's the directive mm-hmm. from higher up. It's a funny thing. So the first thing that we do and our marketing really focuses on is educating the market. Like, how should you and can you leverage AI in the world of analytics and in the world of data? And I gave an example of our company, which is a SaaS company, but I mean, I'm thinking of another one of our customers, which is a multinational retailer, health and beauty supply products, but they use it just to understand like retail and even, you know, supply chain, right? Like what's mm-hmm. happening? Where am I getting stuck? And like, these are real business problems that come up. So the first step is when you're in a company like ThoughtSpot that's kind of ahead of the market a little bit, ahead of the industry, which, you know, I think you all know this very well in the positions you've been in, is it's about education. It's like, how can you think about using AI, not for a poem for your friend's birthday, mm-hmm. but actually for use in your day-to-day life and make it easier. So education, thought leadership is a big part of what we do. You know, when we're looking to implement, it's kind of the next level of education, which is like, all right, what are you using today? What are your data sources? Where are those feeding in? How can we kind of educate not only why it's important, but how you can actually bring that to life? What does your data team structure look like? And really kind of help them shape the way they operate a little differently. Because in a world with a solution like ThoughtSpot or AI, business intelligence in general, you know, your data analyst team may be a little different. They may not mm-hmm. be behind the keyboard building all day. They're probably going to need to elevate to be more insight focused. And so maybe the skill set's different. So we have those conversations with customers, educate, really help them make sure they have the right team structure. Because a lot of times with business leaders accessing data directly, the way you operate is just a little bit different. So we do a lot of that with customers and make sure they know like who and how this actual workflow will be. And then at the end of the day, it's all about really understanding their use case. It can be super unique. Like I was just in London a couple of weeks ago and listening to a customer talk about their experience with ThoughtSpot and, you know, just the passion that they had for solving this one problem with supply chain and tracking pallets through the travel experience of that pallet mm-hmm. and finding lost pallets could save millions to their bottom yep. line. And so like hearing that and translating that into outcomes that then we help them deliver on through, as you know, our customer success team and our services teams, like that's kind of the path we take. It's a lot of education because we're industry leading and not everyone knows what to do. And then it's the solution itself. And then of course, it's like, okay, how can we make sure we understand your use case? We set you up for success with that.
So I want to break that down a little bit, playing back to you. And I want to start with the education piece of it, because this thing, AI, is the first time in my career in tech where for all of us, you know, you, me, anybody who's not a deep AI expert, it is a bit of a black box. It's like magic. It's like, whoa, there's this jazz hands, right? There's this AI thing that's going on and it's magical. And so on the education piece, and our audience says we spend a lot of time on separating the hype from reality and mm-hmm. really helping people understand, look, it's not just this magical thing. You got to get down to what are the specific use cases that are real right now that you can implement. Yep. But also to add on to that, what we emphasize is the fact that there are some massive, big ROIs to be had right now today. This is not hype. This is not overselling, that AI can really make a difference in workflows, take out, you know, a lot of cost, create a lot of efficiency. So I'm just curious your experience when you were talking to customers, are you going through that sort of same curve with them where they're like, I'm not sure, but it's magical. You bring them down to, okay, here's what's real today. But then it's impactful. I mean, what do you guys experience when you're dealing with customers on this, on the education side of it?
Yeah. I mean, 100%, you basically just described our business model, which is like, let's solve this one problem for you.
That really is going to make a difference.
Yeah, that's really going to make a difference. So yeah, like, you know, when we sell into any company and it's like healthcare, finance, it's a horizontal product, touches every vertical, every industry. It's always when you get to that pain of that one business case that business leader feels that they literally can't get access to really understand. And once you find that, that's where you focus. I mean, I think you got it. Exactly. And like, that's how we set up our pricing model. That's how we set up our sales and expansion strategy, because that's what we want to do. We want to solve one problem for them. They'll see the benefit. They see the value. We get value with them, for them. And then it expands over time. Yep. So yeah, I do think that that's a big part of it for sure.
I think that's one of the differences between traditional enterprise software and what I'm seeing with these AI solutions. So enterprise software, take something like a CRM system or whatever, ERP system. You come in and you have this boom, this thing you want to put in that's going to solve all kind of problems, all kind mm-hmm. of problems. And then there's a lot of where these AI solutions, like, look, let's, like a rifle shot, we can solve that problem right there. But boy, the way we solve it, it is, again, it's going to be exponential in terms of taking out costs, you know, whatever it is. You know, I think it is very more targeted, but we encourage our members to think that way with AI right now, because that's how you're going to get the learnings, you're going to build the capabilities, you're going to get the battle scars, and then you can go broader from there. I want to go back to the second part of what you were talking about. So you educate them, okay, you know, use cases. Now you get into the data part of it. Mm-hmm. And so many companies I talk to, they're a little frozen there because they're like, God, my data is just like, it's such a mess, and either it's poor quality or it's scattered across all these different things. They're kind of overwhelmed. But the more and more people I talk to that are in the space like yourself, it's like, look, that is not an overwhelming problem. You can march through that. And so just at a high level, again, just kind of talk about the experience, because I'm sure you were talking to customers and they're like, we would love to do this, but our data is a mess.
Yeah.
So do you have like managed services to help them with that, or professional services, or like, how do you help get them to that knothole?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I would love to meet an executive or an ops team that has clean data.
Yeah.
I
no
would
kidding.
Love that.
I totally agree.
If I ever met that person, totally I would either hire them or call them a liar.
It's a
unicorn. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a unicorn for sure.
It doesn't exist. So to your point, I mean, you know, we're not going to, it's progress over perfect for sure. You're never going to have perfect data, but there's a ton of insights to be gleaned from your data in whatever shape it's in today.
In the current state. Yeah.
Current state. We have issues with data and we're a BI company, right? There are certain things that you can't fully trust. So when that happens, you know, the beauty of like an AI solution is you can see trends, and trends don't lie unless you change the back end of the data. So maybe the perfect pure number, you're a little worried that it's not exactly right. You're not going to take that number to the board because you're like, well, this team changed and I don't know, that was a different manager and they switched. So it's not really, but what you can tell is how that's changed over the last few weeks, how that's changed over the last few months, or anomalies in the data that have sprung up that you can't answer. And then if you can see those, you can start asking why in natural language search in our case. And that gives you like, okay, well, here's what's happening and here's why. And there was a hold up here. So I think we have to get over that. It's not going to be perfect. I think we should always strive to make it better. Even some of the companies that do the account cleanup and the contact health cleanup and things like that, they're having a struggle with like, okay, do we use the city and state of the company or where they live? I work for a California company. I live in South Carolina. Do they know that? I don't know. So these are all things that exist, not just with our own data, but with the data source as a whole. So I think you use what you have. You watch for trends when you're worried about numbers being perfect, and you go with what you have and you make the decisions that you need to make for your company and you make progress. That's what I would say. And the AI component is interesting because you can teach that on your own data set, right? So the more questions you ask and the more you interact with that data, the better it gets, the better the answers are, the more accurate you will receive. So a couple things there.
You said something which I don't want to get lost with the audience here. You said, look, we're a BI company and our data is not perfect. And that, you know, because I do think that people get too twisted up about that. They think that they uniquely have a problem with data quality. And when you said that, it reminded me, this is a little while ago, but you know, maybe 10 years ago, I was talking to an executive at one of the largest storage companies on the planet at that time. And he was telling me, he goes, yeah, but you know, our data is just like so stovepipe, blah, blah. And I'm like, you are a freaking largest storage company on the planet. Yeah. This is what you sell, right? And helping people store their data, access their data. And you're telling me you have a data problem? And you know, he's kind of looking, shrugging his shoulders. So I tell that story because, again, everybody has a data problem. Mm-hmm. Everybody. And so you got to start just moving it forward. And like you said, that when you start to move it forward, you're going to get smarter on the data. Data is going to get better by design because you're, you know, stressing it in these models. But our argument is, you got to start getting the data into a model, whatever that you're using that model for, whether it's evaluating marketing channels, whether it's evaluating renewals, whether it's whatever, you know, finding pallets, whatever it is, you got to start the journey to get it into a model. I mean, that's what I think is the task at hand right now for every leadership team, is to say, how do we start those journeys? And there's multiple journeys to getting data, you know, for multiple models. I think that's really the priority right now. So give me a sense, just as you help customers, time to value, which you were talking about earlier for your own personal experience. But again, you guys go into a customer, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, our data's a mess, whatever, but we want to start getting better. Is that a 3 month journey, a 6 month journey? Just roughly. I mean, how long does it take? And if you tell me 2 weeks, I'm going to call bullshit. But anyway, so, but how long does it take before they start to be able to get some, you know, insight from the data?
It depends on how big the use case is. It definitely depends on, I mean, there are a lot of caveats, right? Data readiness, and the way we think about data readiness is there a cloud data warehouse or does it exist in all these places? And first, you have to consolidate it. If we get, which most of our customers are, because that is our ideal customer profile, we serve customers that typically are structured in a cloud data warehouse in some way. Can mm-hmm. we serve others? Mm-hmm. Yes. But in terms of fastest time to value, that's where we see value because their data is already structured. So just a little insight to kind of how we think about segmenting our market. But if it's that way, it is mm-hmm. absolutely as little as weeks. It's 6 to 8 weeks when we can get search mm-hmm. on set up on their data right away. A lot of times we'll do it in pieces and parts. You can do the natural language search within a few weeks. And then mm-hmm. over time, we set up things like live boards and things like that for them so that they have more structured business reporting style mm-hmm. Implementation. So initial value can be fast.
Yeah. But I mean, you made an important caveat there in the sense of if their starting point is they've got things structured, cloud-based data warehouse, mm-hmm. that's good. We can get there faster. Other folks is going to take, you know, a little bit longer to get to that step. But I'm curious because you talked about market segmentation there. Are there any types of market segments or customer types, industry types, however you want to describe this, where you're seeing more rapid adoption of your technology, of being able to leverage AI effectively? Is there any patterns you're seeing there?
Yeah. For sure. We are seeing a lot of interest in the retail market. So okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is that because they have a lot? Sure. Is it they have a volume, such volume of data? Is that part of the reason?
Exactly. It's volume of data. It's also disparate, right? So if you're trying to compare stores or compare how things are operating and really get to the most efficient way to do business, like they have a lot of differently run potentially franchises or whatever that they need to compare. Yep. So that's a big one. Yeah. Financial institutions and healthcare are on the rise. And lately, really? A lot of interest from like the aviation industry, which is a different market.
What are they trying to go? What are they trying to go after there? Is it like price optimization? Is it route optimization?
Exactly. Like efficiency, both in operations and in air, it can be related to any of their like ancillary services that they have, you know, food services and things they contract out. It can be their point systems and how those operate, trying to understand like use cases and who's getting benefit and who's not. It's been
interesting.
It's actually been all over the board, but for I think any industry that's in sort of a operational effectiveness stage of growth, which you know SaaS obviously is and others as well are really, really interested. Well,
so super fascinating to me. So two of the use cases that you put on the table are retail and airlines are industries that are running typically on razor thin margins. And so optimization, what you just said, operational efficiency, and now leveraging a new tool in the tool bag, which is can I leverage data in a new and meaningful way to provide operational insights? If I can shave pennies off of something, it's going to make a difference to my business model. So that makes sense to me. And those are use cases where you're going to have, you know, big data sets to play with, retail, airline operations. Let's click back though. You mentioned healthcare. So that one's super fascinating to me, only because as we talk to other member companies who serve healthcare, there's always like, oh man, healthcare companies are like super cautious with their data and they're very protective. And, you know, and so they move a lot slower than other industries. What are just some of the emerging use cases that you guys are seeing there for healthcare?
Cigna comes to mind. They're essentially reducing kind of the way they operate and the way they mm-hmm. charge. By ThoughtSpot's self-service. So it's basically their approach to healthcare analytics and making it a little more available and accessible makes it more affordable for their members and their patients. So
interesting.
It is an interesting use case. And that I would say is a growing use case, less of like we have hundreds of healthcare customers. I think probably again, a changing industry and when industries are in a moment of change, they're looking for like, what are those things they can do to really move the needle? And that is one of them.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, we're talking about capabilities here that ultimately are going to permeate every industry. Mm-hmm. I believe that very deeply. No industry is going to be like, oh, like this whole data analytics AI thing just kind of passed me by and it didn't really apply to us. But I do think it's going to be lumpy, right? Some industries are going to lean into it more aggressively. Other industries are going to drag their heels a little bit. But I'm curious, you know, once you start working with your customers, how do you define or measure success with these deployments? What's that typical end game? And I'm sure it's different based on different use cases, but just describe what that can look like.
I mean, I do think it is very different for different use cases. However, we think about it in two ways, initial value and then outcomes. And the outcomes are really defined by the customers. In some cases, in retail, for example, their outcome is to understand which stores they should close and where they should open new stores. Like that's their overall, this is what outcome. I want to go achieve because, of course, the outcome related to that is cost savings or being more efficient with revenue or whatever that is. So when we have, this is why we bought ThoughtSpot outcome that we're driving towards, we put in the essentially optimizing the outcome. So we've got steps towards that. We implement the first use case. You know, we set up ThoughtSpot to tap into the data that will tell us that. Cause again, they'll have all kinds of data, the retail sales, the partners they work with. So we really focus ThoughtSpot on the data set that works directly with that use case so that we can get quick, fast, natural language search answers for them for that use case, while also kind of building the underlying data sets that they may want access to down the road, right? And then as we work with them over time, a lot of times they can expand use cases, you know, 10 to 15 additional use cases just with what we've already talked about, done, and had access to. But a lot of times our team will come in and say, hey, like maybe this data source isn't connected into the cloud data warehouse. If you did that, you could also see how your contractors relate to the sales, to the, you know, like all of the kind of the triangle of things. And they weren't thinking that. They were thinking one-to-one, solve that problem, move on. But we have enough experience where we can actually kind of help them think through, well, if you connect in other data sources, add that to your base, you're able to kind of triangulate some additional questions that you may not have even known you had, or the AI is then kind of start to train it to make suggestions like, hey, did you know that this contractor keeps popping up when you have stores that are saying need to close, right? Like maybe there's a correlation, maybe there's not, but at least there's that understanding that some things might be happening. So we take a very measured approach to outcomes. Initial value is our critical goal. And then once they have that initial use case value, then we can look to grow over time.
So let's go back to the example you put on the table around, you know, a retailer, right? Trying to decide what to open, what to close. And there's a target outcome there around revenue optimization, right? Like we want to be able to be driving the most amount of revenue most efficiently. You know, historically, software companies, we like to talk about outcomes, but we're very nervous about committing to those outcomes or even pricing around those outcomes, right? Because it's like, gosh, we don't know if we can actually get the customer there, right? So we have a great sort of sales story with a beautiful ROI on the front end, and then we very rarely close the loop on the back end. I'm curious, when you're setting up these target objectives, does it influence at all the way you price? Does it open the opportunity to do any kind of outcome-based pricing? Do you have more traditional pricing? How do you approach that with customers if you're going to anchor with them on like, hey, let's go after that target outcome. That's what we're going to do here. Help you optimize, you know, the number of stores. How does that influence, in a sense, the way you take the money off the table? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a great question. I know it's the first company I've worked for that actually has well-defined and in-use consumption-based pricing. It's great.
No, interesting.
So, yeah, okay. We do. We absolutely do. I will kind of step back and say we actually, as an enterprise company, and we typically work with, you know, very large companies, GSKs of the world, all the way down to small digital natives. So we do have a range of options. It's not one pricing model because we need optionality, and that's part of our value prop. But I would say for the most part, customers choose consumption-based pricing, which is consumption and calls to the data source. But we also have the per-user model. So like there are, in a competitive landscape, if they're, you know, used to something and they need a little more predictability, that is something that we have and we offer. But I would say most people are interested in at least evaluating the consumption model and kind of understanding what that would look like for them to give them that kind of taste of success and then grow over time.
So let me play that back. So you do have what I'd say a very traditional model that people can do, which is user-based pricing. You get access to the platform, number of users. On the consumption-based, it's the volume that they're using the platform. Is that what it is?
Basically.
So how many calls or their transactions are running against it. And so, hey, if you're using it a lot, you pay more. But if you're not using it, you're not getting value out of it, you pay less. And so people are attracted to that. I think what's interesting on that, that I'll just tell you an aside story. So there are several member companies we have, whether it's the Microsofts, the Googles of the world, that have these consumption-based models for their cloud infrastructure. And I was talking to the head of customer success at Google. I've told this story before on this podcast, but I'll tell it again, that they're on a consumption-based model. And he told me, he said, hey, Thomas, he goes, you know, I used to sell user-based and people go, okay, I have these licenses, but I don't know if I'm getting value. So then you go to consumption and you go, well, hey, you're using it. And then he goes, it doesn't take them long to go, but wait, am I getting value from these transactions? So it is, you know, I believe that's why I'll go back to the outcome piece of it. And I think, to be honest with you, companies like yourselves are well positioned for this, is you can ride this journey with them, with customers. You can say, hey, you don't want to do user? Let's go consumption and just pay for, if you're not using it, you don't have to pay. And they go, okay, great. Then it gets to a point where they go, okay, yeah, I'm doing transactions, I'm using it, but am I getting value? You are then going to be able to go over to that outcome that we were just talking about and say, hey, fine, you want to price around that or you want to anchor our conversation around that? Because I think for a lot of technology providers, ultimately, that's where you're going to get pushed. Because you know, people don't want to deploy technology unless they can directly connect the dots, you know, and that's surprisingly a relatively new phenomenon. We've deployed a lot of software historically where we didn't always connect the dots to the ROI, but I think more and more customers they're more sophisticated, they're more demanding in terms of making sure they're getting the return on the investment. So I think it's going there, but I was just curious, you know, how you guys were going on that journey. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds in the industry in general, right? Over the next amount of years.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm a big fan of kind of skin in the game as well. I mean, I think a consumption model is very important to lean into and have, but at the same time, you still work with salespeople unless you're a PLG company and you're just running that motion. Like, you still need to make sure that a customer is bought into the use case that you're agreeing on. So I think there's some balance there, but I totally agree with you.
So I'm watching the clock here. One last question for you. And that is, you know, so you were, you know, describing the heritage of ThoughtSpot, right? So you go from traditional software to SaaS, but now you are driving this whole new wave of AI capabilities. As you scale that at a software company, what are some of the challenges you guys are seeing to just scale those capabilities, whether it's employee skill sets or whatever it is? What are some of the challenges that you see that are different than when you were just a SaaS company?
That's a great question. I mean, I think there's a couple of ways I would answer that. First is, when you are an industry leader, which we are, and when you are an industry leader that is not tethered to a larger company, right? Mm-hmm. So some of our competitors are part of bigger companies that are not, you know, business intelligence at their core. So that gives an advantage for things like innovation, you know, hiring the smartest and best and moving quickly. So that is a good thing. Mm-hmm. With that, sometimes the need to kind of slow down to speed up in some ways. So I'll take the data readiness kind of example that I gave earlier, which is, some of our growth has been a little limited by getting data ready for our customers and the growth and of the cloud data warehouse kind of trajectory. I would say that was a blip in time. Now your Snowflakes, your Databricks, your others are, you know, the skyrocketing, and even just tethering to
making
that.
Making it easier.
Even one of those would be, it does make it a lot easier. But there are moments like that. There are moments like that. We've been doing AI for a long time. So even talking about language models and things like that, look, we've got a podcast called The Data Chief, and Cindy Housen runs it, and she's great. And she's been talking about these things for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And probably in the last year, people are finally like asking questions that, you know, she would have had to sort of teach them to ask.
Yes.
Even 2-3 years ago. So I would say that's a little bit of a challenge, but it's also, it's one of those like challenge, and it's an optimistic challenge, because we're just going to keep on going and keep on moving in the right direction. The other, you know, sort of challenge that's less related to kind of the infrastructure is just, there are so many options, so many directions you could go that staying focused can be a real challenge as well. So
can I Can I just pause and interrupt you on that one? Is it because I think, just to really emphasize what you said there, I think for a lot of the companies who have, you know, like yourselves, these AI capabilities, some of these companies, all these brand new AI startups, that is the problem that I see with them. And if I talk to these founders specifically, they're smaller, because it's a fact that there are so many rich use cases. I bet that's your problem. It's just like, we could go chase this use case. We could go chase this. We could chase this industry. It just becomes overwhelming, because you're like, yeah, there's a lot of there, but you don't have enough salespeople, enough service people, enough everything.
You got it.
To chase everything. So my coaching to them always is like, look, pick a killer set of use cases and rinse and repeat right now. Just focus on that. Get super good at that. And, you know, make your hay there, and then you can worry about broadening. But if you chase every shiny penny right now, I think you're just going to get distracted. So it's very fascinating to me that you're experiencing the same thing from your chair, that you basically see a lot of opportunity, but you got to pick your priorities.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And we remind ourselves of that every day, because it's exciting out there. You want to get after it, but that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, hey, I really appreciate you stopping in and giving us the perspective of what you guys are seeing. And again, it's another proof point for the audience. I mean, there are a lot of great firms out there like ThoughtSpot that can help here. I mean, and I do think that a lot of companies, you don't have this capabilities in turn, not just the technical capabilities, but just sometimes the expertise and everything else required to do it. You know, you leverage what is out there in the industry, but don't wait. Start moving forward on these capabilities, because again, it's going to move fast. And again, the impact of these use cases when you run them to the ground are massive. So I always end this podcast with a question of the day. And the question of the day today, TSIA, we are convinced that AI is going to revolutionize workflows, specifically RevGen workflows. The question is your company prepared for that revolution? Cheers, everybody.